as he continued down the hall with long, quick strides. Mitra and T3 scrambled to keep pace, staying a respectful 2 steps behind their supposed owner. Once they were out of sight and earshot of the guards, Scourge stopped and turned to address them.
"This could complicate things," he said. "Nyriss wouldn't have asked after the others if she wasn't growing concerned. I'd hoped to avoid her until the Emperor made his move, but if I put off seeing her now, it will look suspicious."
Scourge had spoken to the Emperor just that morning. Mitra imagined it would at least take another day or two before he assembled his forces to strike at Nyriss.
"I'm not letting you out of my sight," she warned him. "If you meet with her, T3 and I had better go with you."
"Ridiculous," Scourge spat. "I would never be so insulting as to bring one of my personal slaves into a meeting with someone of Nyriss's rank."
"Then you'd better think of something fast," Mitra said. "Because if this all goes sour, I'm going to whip out my lightsaber and start chopping off heads."
"I could bring you if I was presenting you to Nyriss as a gift," Scourge said. "But then there would be no reason for me to keep you close by."
"Forget it," Mitra snarled.
T3 echoed her sentiment with a shrill squawk.
"Then what do you suggest?" Scourge demanded.
"Take me to Revan now," Mitra said. "I'll take my chances on fighting our way out."
"I didn't bring you here so you could throw your life away, and I have no intention of becoming a martyr."
Mitra was about to fire back another angry retort when the stronghold was rocked to its foundations by a very loud explosion coming from somewhere off to the east.
"The Imperial Guard,"
Scourge gasped.
"They're here."
Alarms began to ring through the corridor, mingling with the sounds of shouts and running feet as Nyriss's people responded to the sudden attack. Mitra reached up and yanked the slave collar from her neck, hurling it across the floor. T3 mimicked her by popping off his restraining bolt.
"The dungeon is this way," Scourge said, quickly putting their now pointless argument behind them. "Follow me."
The explosions continued as he led them through the twisting passages. They were coming from all sides. Obviously, the Imperial Guard had the entire stronghold surrounded. Based on the frequency and size of the distant explosions, Mitra guessed they were using an artillery assault to try to breach the walls at multiple locations. Males and females ran past them in both directions, some rushing to join the fray and others scrambling to safety. The unexpected attack had caught Nyriss's people completely off guard. They were in disarray, their efforts to defend the stronghold uncoordinated and disorganized.
"I would have expected someone on the Dark Council to put up better resistance,"
Mitra said as they turned a corner and raced down another hall.
"The security chief and 3 of his top lieutenants aren't here to rally them, thanks to you," he reminded her.
They rounded another corner and confronted the first real sign of any kind of counterattack. 8 soldiers led by a lightsaber-wielding Sith acolyte had taken up positions in the corridor roughly 10 meters away from a large smoking hole in the wall. As the smoke cleared, dozens of red-uniformed soldiers poured through the breach, armed with blaster pistols and electro-staffs. Nyriss's people opened fire, mowing down the first wave. Those in the ranks behind never even slowed. Driven forward by their furious devotion to the Emperor, they charged the enemy line with a reckless disregard for their own safety. Had the defenders held their ground and continued to fire, they might have survived several more waves. But their morale was shaken by the berserker mentality of their attackers. So instead, they broke ranks and tried to flee. None of them succeeded. 3 were taken down by blaster fire, shot in the back as they turned to run. The other 5, including the acolyte with the lightsaber, were swallowed up by a sea of red-uniformed guards and smashed down with electro-staffs. The entire incident took less than 10 seconds. Plenty of time for Scourge to lead Mitra and T3 in another direction. But instead of trying to avoid the melee, the Sith had simply held his ground and watched. As the last defender fell, the invaders broke into 2 teams and set off in opposite directions down the hall. The chance to hide until they passed was lost, and the red-robed butchers approached. Mitra started to reach for the lightsaber hidden inside her black knee-high leather boot. Scourge grabbed her wrist and shook his head. He stepped back against the wall, dragging her with him. Recognizing Scourge as a friendly target, the Imperial guards ran past without even a second glance.
"The dungeons are close," Scourge told her once they were alone again.
They were fortunate enough not to encounter any more battles for the rest of the journey, though they came across the aftermath of several violent skirmishes. Some of the bodies wore the red uniforms of the invaders, but for every one of them were at least five of Nyriss's people. Security guards, acolytes, and even civilian staff lay strewn about the halls and corridors. The Emperor's guard had spared no one. Mitra understood there had been no other way to free Revan, but she still felt revulsion at the wholesale slaughter. When she noticed the body of a young Twi'lek slave lying on the floor with her throat cut, she forced herself to look away.
"Nyriss's personal attendant," Scourge noted. "But I don't see Nyriss among the dead."
T3 beeped, and Mitra shook her head.
"I don't think she escaped," she said,
remembering the ruthless efficiency and organization of the attacking troops.
"Her fate is irrelevant," Scourge declared.
"Right. Take us to Revan."
They rounded a final corner, bringing them face to face with a massive durasteel door. Scourge stepped up and punched in a security code, but the door didn't open. He tried again, and the pad responded with a sharp buzz.
"The whole place is in emergency lockdown," he said. "My security codes won't work."
"Don't worry," Mitra said confidently. "T3 can slice through any security system."
"He'd better hurry," Scourge said. "I don't sense guards on the other side of the door."
"You think they fled?"
He shook his head.
"I think when the alarms went off, Nyriss told them to execute the prisoner."
At first, Revan thought the distant explosions were an unusual side effect of some new drug combination his captors were trying on him. But when the alarms started blaring, his addled mind realized the facility was under attack.
"Mitra,"
he mumbled. He struggled to his feet, battling the mind-numbing effects of the chemicals coursing through his veins. Had his mind been able to focus, he could have purged them from his system. But of course, the entire point of the drugs was to keep him from drawing on the Force. A few seconds later, he heard someone outside the door of his cell. When the door opened, he expected to see Scourge, but instead he found himself faced with an unfamiliar guard. The young man was a dark-skinned human. He was holding a blaster out at arm's length, pointing it at Revan. His hand was visibly trembling. From outside, another voice shouted,
"Hurry! Do it!"
Even in Revan's clouded state, the situation was obvious. In the wake of the attack, someone had ordered them to kill the prisoner.
"Squeeze the trigger and it will be the last action you ever take," Revan warned.
"Come on!"
the other voice said.
"Just do it! What's the problem?"
"Shut up!"
the young man shouted to his hidden companion.
"You were too scared to even open the cell!"
Their fear was completely understandable. Since his incarceration, Revan had been held under strict quarantine. Nobody had been given access to his cell without Scourge being present, and even then the Sith had mostly come to see him alone. No doubt it had been drilled into the guards' heads over and over how powerful and dangerous the prisoner was. They'd been warned against having any dealings with him whatsoever. His mysterious reputation built up over years of speculation and rumors among his jailers.
"Set the weapon down if you want to live," Revan told the young man.
Through the veil of drugs, he strained to reach out with the Force, amplifying the other's fear and confusion.
"No!"
his friend shouted above the piercing alarms, still staying hidden around the corner.
"He'll kill us!"
"I promise to spare you," Revan said. "I give you my word as a Jedi."
"See? See?"
the man with the gun squealed.
"I told you he was a Jedi!"
"Nyriss has sent you on a suicide mission," Revan told them.
How do you know who we work for?
The man barked, the pitch of his voice rising.
The Force shows me many things.
Another explosion from above, this one much closer, caused the guard to nearly drop his weapon. He fumbled it briefly before seizing it with both hands and quickly bringing it up again to point at Revan. Revan briefly contemplated making a grab for the blaster, but the drug slowed him physically as much as mentally. Instead, he remained still and calm.
This is bad,
the young man said, squeezing the blaster's handle so hard that his knuckles were becoming discolored.
This is bad.
Just walk away from all this, Revan told them. It's your only real chance of survival.
We can't walk away,
the guard moaned.
The doors upstairs won't open. We're locked in.
Just shoot him,
his friend shouted.
He can't hurt you. If he was gonna stop you, he would have done it by now.
There were several seconds of silence, punctuated by the alarms and another series of explosions in rapid succession.
Nyriss will kill us if she finds us down here with you still alive,
the man with the blaster said, his voice almost apologetic.
Nyriss is already dead,
Revan said, trying a different tactic as he tried to apply even more pressure through the Force.
Do you hear the explosions? The alarms? My friends are coming to liberate me. You say you're trapped in here. What do you think my friends will do if they find you standing over my corpse?
He's got a point,
the unseen speaker said reluctantly.
Listen to all those bombs going off. This isn't just some quick hit-and-run attack.
Surrender to me, and I will guarantee your safety,
Revan said.
I give you my word as a Jedi.
The young man's head turned quickly back and forth, from Revan to his friend outside the cell, and then back to Revan again. Then he dropped the blaster as if it were on fire. Revan calmly stepped out of the cell and got his first look at the other guard, another human male, perhaps a few years older than the first. Both guards were frozen with fear, watching his every move intently. Each time the alarm whooped overhead, they flinched.
I will not harm you,
Revan assured them. Both men seemed to relax a little, and Revan tried to project calm, soothing waves through the Force to further ease their minds.
Sit down over there against the wall until my friends arrive, he suggested. You don't want them to mistake you for a threat.
Seeing the wisdom of his words, both men scrambled to follow his instructions. Several minutes later, they heard a loud crash from above, followed by the sounds of footsteps racing down the steep stairs. And then Mitra descended into view, dressed in some type of dancer's outfit. Seeing Revan, her face broke into a wide grin.
I knew I'd find you,
she said, rushing over to embrace him fiercely.
It's been a long time, Revan whispered, wrapping his arms around her.
After a moment, she broke the embrace, and Revan noticed her nose had crinkled up against the powerful odor wafting off him.
A real long time,
he said with an apologetic shrug, eliciting a soft laugh from Mitra.
A touching reunion,
a familiar voice said.
Lord Scourge!
One of the guards shrieked in terror. Revan spun Mitra to the side and stepped in front of her, an instinctive but foolish move. Mitra was a Jedi. She knew how to handle herself. And unarmed, he was no match for the Sith.
It's okay,
Mitra said, placing a hand on Revan's shoulder.
Scourge is here to help us.
It took Revan's foggy mind a moment to process what she was saying. Once he figured it out, he couldn't help but laugh out loud.
So I finally get to learn your name, he said. Scourge. No wonder you didn't want to tell me. Make jokes once we're safely away from here, Scourge said.
He's right,
Mitra told him.
T3's keeping watch at the top of the stairs. Come on.
Go ahead,
the Sith Lord told them, drawing his lightsaber and approaching the guards cowering on the floor.
I'll take care of the witnesses.
No,
Revan said, I promised to protect them. Scourge gave him a look of utter disbelief.
It's going to be hard enough to get out of here without escorting these pathetic excuses for soldiers.
I gave them my word,
Revan said. A rush of dizziness swept over him, and he reeled.
What's wrong?
Mitra asked, reaching out to catch him before he fell.
They keep me drugged,
Revan said.
I just need a minute.
With Mitra's help, he lowered himself to the floor. His heart was pounding, and his head was spinning. During the confrontation with the guard, he must have instinctively used the force to keep the worst of the drug's effects at bay. But he wasn't strong enough to keep it up any longer. And now his body was responding with an acute overreaction. Scourge stepped over to a med kit on the wall and yanked it open. He grabbed a hypodermic filled with a green luminescent fluid.
This will help,
he said, injecting it into Revan's arm.
But it will take a few minutes.
I have something else, Mitra told him. Bastila asked me to give it to you.
She nodded at Scourge, who pulled a package from a large pouch on his hip. He tossed it to Revan, who didn't even try to catch it, but just picked it up off the floor. The object was wrapped in cloth. It was clearly metal, and there was something oddly familiar about it.
You spoke with Bastila?
He asked.
You saw her?
Mitra nodded.
And your son. They're both well.
Revan smiled. His mind felt like it was floating blissfully away. But he wasn't sure if the euphoria was triggered by thoughts of his family or the drugs still working their way out of his system. He unwrapped the cloth to reveal the masked helmet he had worn during his campaigns against the Mandalorians and the Republic. In an instant, all his lost memories came flooding back to him. A million images, years upon years of forgotten people, places, and events, flooded his consciousness simultaneously. In his weakened state, it was too much to take. As his brain went into sensory overload, his body went limp.
What's happening?
Scourge demanded as Revan collapsed on the floor.
I don't know,
Mitra said, her hands fumbling to check Revan's pulse as he lay motionless on the ground. His eyes were closed, but the lids were fluttering madly. Otherwise, he was completely still. From the stairs, T3 let out a piercing wail, several octaves higher than the incessant alarms.
Someone's coming,
Mitra said. Scourge turned to the guards still sitting on the floor.
Ready your blasters, you fools,
he shouted. As they scrambled to their feet, T3 let out what could only be described as a shriek of terror. An instant later, the little astromech came tumbling down the stairs and bounced across the floor as if he'd been shot from a cannon. He landed in the corner on his back, his wheels still spinning.
Get Revan out of the way,
Scourge said to Mitra. As she dragged the Jedi's unconscious body into the nearby cell, one of the guards drew his weapon, while the other rushed over and picked his discarded blaster up from where Revan had kicked it aside. Scourge nodded at the guards. In response to his silent command, they crept to the foot of the stairs and peered up toward the door above. A burst of purple lightning arced down the steps, catching both men in the chest. They barely had time to scream before they were turned into charred and smoking husks. Scourge took a step back, knowing exactly who had been responsible for unleashing the fury of the dark side against the hapless guards. Nyriss made her way slowly down the stairs, the outspread fingers of her left hand still crackling with electricity. In her right hand, she held her lightsaber, the blade humming softly. By the time she reached the bottom, Mitra had emerged from the nearby cell. She ignited her lightsaber and came to stand beside Scourge.
What's this?
Nyriss asked, her voice mocking.
Another Jedi?
When neither of them answered, she turned her head to the side and laughed bitterly.
The Imperial Guard will make sure I never leave my stronghold alive, she told them. But neither will any of you.
She raised her free hand above her head and fired off another burst of lightning. Both Scourge and Mitra threw themselves clear of the deadly electrical bolt, but in doing so they gave Nyriss the early advantage. Before they could recover, she leapt at them. Despite her withered appearance, she moved with all the speed and ferocity of a dark side warrior in her prime. She landed right between her two adversaries, her blade flashing back and forth in a series of slashes and cuts that immediately threw her two opponents on the defensive. Scourge barely managed to parry the first wave of her assault, unable to even think about countering with an attack of his own. Another quick thrust forced him off balance, and he staggered backward. Nyriss seized on the opportunity to focus all her efforts on breaking through Mitra's defenses. The Jedi was clearly overmatched. Though she managed to hold her ground, she was forced down to one knee. In the awkward position, her right flank was exposed, and Nyriss brought her blade in to deliver a crippling cut. At the same time, Scourge lashed out with the force, catching Nyriss flush in the center of her chest. An ordinary foe would have been thrown clear across the room, but Nyriss instinctively threw up a force barrier to protect herself, absorbing and redirecting the brunt of the impact. Even so, Scourge's attack knocked her off balance just enough to send her lightsaber wide off the mark, giving Mitra the opportunity she needed to scramble away to safety. Scourge rushed forward, hoping to drive Nyriss back into a corner, but she met his charge with an invisible wave of rippling energy. It picked Scourge up and tossed him head over heels, sending him crashing to the wall. Dazed, he looked up just in time to see another bolt of violet lightning catch Mitra in the chest. Like Nyriss, she threw up a barrier to save herself from the worst of it, but she was still knocked from her feet.
"Did you think I would be as easy to defeat as Zedrix?"
Nyriss shouted, raising her lightsaber triumphantly above her head. The air around her began to crackle and grow hot as she gathered herself for the killing blow. Scourge felt the energy building inside her, and he knew he would be powerless to stop it. Nyriss was too powerful. Her command of the dark side was too strong.
"Gaze upon me and see your doom," she declared. "I am Darth Nyriss, Lord of the Sith. I am the conqueror of Dresden, the destroyer of Meldia, and a member of the Dark Council."
Scourge braced himself for the end. Just then, Revan emerged from the cell. He had pulled the hood of his Jedi robe up to cover his head, and he wore the red and gray mask hiding his face. A dozen bolts of lightning sprang from Nyriss's hand, arcing across the room to incinerate her enemies. Instead of leaping back into the cell to avoid the deadly attack, Revan stepped forward to intercept it. Both hands were held in front of him, his arms fully extended at shoulder height, his thumbs touching and his fingers splayed wide. He drew the bolts of lightning into his waiting grasp, channeling them away from their intended targets and absorbing their power.
"I am Revan Reborn," he said to Nyriss. "And before me, you are nothing."
Nyriss's eyes went wide as Revan unleashed the power of her own attack against her. She tried to throw up another force shield, but the bolts ripped it apart and continued on unabated. The lightning engulfed her, the intense heat consuming her instantly, leaving only a pile of charred ash. Scourge slowly clambered to his feet as Revan helped Mitra up. In the corner, the upended astromech let out a plaintive whistle and awkwardly managed to rock himself back into an upright position. Revan walked over and knelt beside the closer of the two dead soldiers. He placed a hand on the man's chest, but didn't speak.
"We have to go,"
Mitra said softly, coming over and gently touching Revan on the shoulder to interrupt his thoughts.
"We don't want the Imperial Guard to know you were here."
He stood up and slowly turned to Scourge. There was something unnerving about staring into the faceless mask. It made Revan seem more intimidating, more powerful. Or maybe Scourge just felt that way because he'd watched him destroy Nyriss. Whatever the reason, he was more confident than ever that he'd made the right choice. If anyone had the strength to stop the Emperor, it was this man.
"This is yours,"
the Sith said, taking the hilt of Revan's lightsaber from his belt. Revan accepted the gift with a brief nod, then simply said, "Get us out of here."
Chapter 25.
Scourge led them up the stairs and back to the breach in the wall where the Emperor's guard had first burst in. Though they could hear the distant sounds of battle echoing faintly through the halls, they didn't encounter combatants from either side. Once they were outside, Mitra allowed herself to breathe a sigh of relief. Night had fallen, but several fires burning inside Nyriss's stronghold illuminated the grounds, giving them a clear view of the destruction. The thick stone wall surrounding the courtyard and the building had been reduced to rubble, and judging by the number of bodies strewn about the courtyard, this had been the location of the fiercest fighting. They picked their way through the carnage to where Scourge's speeder stood unharmed near the landing pad. Every vehicle around it had been destroyed by artillery fire.
"It's a miracle this thing's still in one piece," Revan remarked.
"The guard must have been watching our arrival," Scourge said. "They knew which speeder was mine."
The four of them climbed in, Revan and Mitra helping T3, then headed for the cave where Mitra and Scourge had first met. During the journey, Mitra tried to study Revan without being too obvious. He was still wearing the red and gray mask. For her, this was his true face. She knew what he looked like beneath his helmet, but he had almost never removed it during their campaign against the Mandalorians. Seeing him in the cell without it had struck her as odd. The passage of the years and the suffering he had endured as a prisoner were clearly etched on his features. When he wore the mask, however, all that was hidden. It made him look indomitable, invincible, a legend come to life. Mitra remembered what Bastila had said to her when she had given her the mask. She said she had hidden it from Revan for all those years because she feared what it represented. She feared it would change him. Now Mitra understood what she meant. Without the mask, he looked more human. It was easier to remember he was just a man, with all the weaknesses and vulnerabilities that implied. With the mask, however, Revan was an icon, a symbol. He was the shaper of history, an individual defined by his actions rather than his thoughts, feelings, and beliefs. Maybe Bastila was right. Maybe Revan needed to become what he once had been to survive this. He'd easily bested Darth Nyriss, but the Emperor was a much greater opponent. And yet, she couldn't help but feel some small tinge of regret, knowing the man Bastila loved might have been swallowed up by the weight of Revan's own past. Scourge brought the speeder into land, and the three passengers disembarked.
"You're not coming?"
Mitra asked, when the Sith made no move to join them.
"I'm going back to Kaas City," he said. "I'll see if I can learn any more details about the attack. If we're lucky, the Emperor has spread his resources too thin, leaving him vulnerable. Now might be the time to strike."
"Bring back some supplies," Revan said. "Food, water, soap so I can wash the filth of that prison off me."
Scourge nodded.
"I'll be back in a few hours."
The three of them went into the cave, T3 using his lamp to illuminate the dark interior. The cave was empty now. While waiting for Scourge to return from his meeting with the Emperor, Mitra and T3 had buried the bodies of the fallen security chief and his soldiers in a bare patch of ground a short hike away from the cave's entrance.
"I'm sure you're eager to change out of those clothes," Revan said.
"What about you?"
Mitra thought.
"Why haven't you taken off that mask yet?" "We have something to show you first," she said. "T3, play the holovid."
The droid rolled up beside them, projecting a 30-centimeter-tall image of Bastila, cooing over Revan's 3-year-old son.
I don't know if you'll ever see this,
Bastila said, adjusting a lock of hair on the boy's head as she spoke to the holorecorder.
But I have to believe you'll return someday. And when you do, I thought you'd want to share your son's birthday.
Revan didn't say anything. As if in a daze, he slowly sat down on the floor so the projection was at eye level.
Wave to Daddy,
Bastila said, pointing in the direction of the recorder.
Say we miss you.
The boy did as instructed, waving his tiny arm vigorously as he repeated Bastila's words. To Mitra's relief, Revan reached up and removed his mask as the holovid continued to play, setting it down on the ground beside him.
I know we didn't discuss names before you left, but I called him Vayner.
Revan smiled, realizing it was an anagram of his own name.
I want him to know who his father is. I want him to understand you are a part of him.
A tear rolled down Revan's cheek as he watched the vid, and Mitra quietly retreated into a dark corner of the cave to let him watch in private. She'd stashed her clothes here before she and Scourge had left for Nyriss's stronghold, and the shadows gave her the privacy she needed to change out of her slave's outfit. Instead of the black pants and sleeveless red shirt she'd worn on her first arrival, however, she once again donned her Jedi robes. She didn't consciously think about her choice, and it was only as she was clipping the lightsaber to her belt that she realized what she'd done.
You're following Revan's lead, she thought. If he's wearing Jedi robes, then so are you. Just like old times.
As the holovid continued to play, she lingered near the back of the cave. She couldn't help but overhear Bastila say,
I love you, Revan,
as the recording came to an end.
I love you too,
Revan responded, the acoustics of the cave making his voice unnaturally loud. Mitra shifted her feet uncomfortably at the exchange. She wasn't jealous of Bastila. Mitra loved Revan, but not in that way. She'd never had romantic feelings for her mentor. Rather, she regarded him with deep admiration and intense devotion. At this moment, however, she was acutely aware that Bastila and Revan shared a relationship that went far deeper than what Mitra shared with him. She knew she shouldn't begrudge them that, but some small part of her couldn't help but feel her reunion with Revan had been preempted by a holovid. T3 beeped inquisitively as the video came to an end.
Of course, Revan said. I'll watch it 100 times over if I can. But give me a minute.
He stood up and went to join Mitra in the back of the cave.
Thank you for this, he said. And for saving me.
It was nothing.
No,
Revan said, shaking his head.
Do not underestimate all you've accomplished. Nobody else could have found me across an entire galaxy. Nobody else could have saved me from my imprisonment.
He studied her for a moment.
I was told you had been cut off from the Force, but I can sense its power in you. I always knew you had great potential, but you have become far greater than I could have ever imagined.
I'm just following in your footsteps.
Not anymore, Revan replied. You have blazed your own trail. I can sense you have walked a path even I would not dare to tread. I owe you everything, Mitra. It is a debt I will never be able to repay.
No,
Mitra said with a wan smile.
Without your teaching, I could never have become what I am today. I'm the one who owes a debt she can never repay.
Then why don't we call it even?
Revan said.
A wise and just solution,
she replied.
As always.
Would you like to see the holovid of Bastila and my son?
He asked, offering her his hand.
It would mean more to watch it with a friend at my side.
Of course,
she said, a lump forming in her throat.
It would be my honor.
When Scourge arrived back at the cave, he found Mitra and Revan huddled side by side on the floor, staring at a holovid projected by T3. He caught a glimpse of a young human female and what Scourge assumed was her child, but as he approached, the droid quickly cut the recording off.
"What was that?"
he asked.
"My wife and son," Revan said.
He stood up stiffly and stretched, and Scourge wondered how long he had been sitting on the floor of the cave watching the holovid. He also noticed that Revan had removed his mask. It was sitting on the ground beside him, seemingly forgotten.
"I didn't know you were married," he said.
When Revan didn't answer, it was clear he had no intention of discussing his personal life with a Sith. They might be allies, Scourge realized, but they were far from friends. Which was as it should be. For a Sith Lord, friends were a liability.
"What did you find out?"
Mitra asked as Revan extended a hand to help her up.
"It wasn't just Nyriss who was attacked. The Emperor killed them all."
"The files you showed me listed 5 current members of the Dark Council plotting against him,"
Mitra said, looking to clarify.
"Are you saying the Emperor's guard wiped out all 5 in the space of a single day?"
"I said he killed them all," Scourge replied. "All 12 members of the Dark Council, even those who weren't part of the conspiracy. He wanted to send a message no one would ever forget."
"How is that possible?" Revan asked. "He attacked a dozen of the most powerful Sith Lords in their seats of power simultaneously? How many troops does he have?"
"The Imperial Guard were only unleashed on Nyriss and 2 others. The Emperor must have assumed they were the ones least likely to answer his summons. The other 9 were called together in the hours before the attack to meet with the Emperor at his citadel. None of them left alive."
"So what's happening now?"
Mitra asked.
"News of the massacre spread quickly," Scourge said. "As you would expect, the result was chaos. Thousands are fleeing for their lives, fearing we are on the brink of civil war. Others see an opportunity to strike at rivals weakened by the sudden loss of political allies, and armed platoons are roaming the streets."
"How did the Emperor react?"
Revan asked.
"He's declared martial law and imposed a curfew over the entire city. The guard are enforcing his orders with their typical ruthless efficiency. He also forbade any ship or shuttle to land or leave before he launched his attack, and he shut down all off-world communications."
"He's quarantined the entire planet," Revan said. "He wants to get everything here back under control before any other worlds hear that he slaughtered the entire Dark Council."
"You told me he was mad," Mitra muttered. "But this is outrageous. There had to be a better way for him to handle this. Thousands of his people are going to die before order is restored."
"The last time I was here on Dromund Kaas, I peered into the depths of the Emperor's mind,"
Revan told them. "A 1,000 lives mean nothing to him."
"The last time you were here,"
Scourge said, pouncing on the phrase.
"Have some of your memories returned?"
"Seeing my old mask triggered something. I remember everything now,"
Revan admitted.
"Malak and I learned the Sith still survived. We came here to Dromund Kaas to investigate. Posing as mercenaries, we spent months learning everything we could about the Emperor and his people. Even back then, he was already planning his invasion of the Republic. When Malak and I learned of his preparations, we tried to stop him. We found a member of the Imperial Guard who was willing to sneak us inside the Citadel."
"Impossible," Scourge declared. "The Guard are bound to the Emperor's will at the end of their training by a powerful ritual. They would never betray him."
"True. But we didn't know that at the time," Revan explained. "We were being led into a trap. The Emperor wanted us to come to him. When we got to his throne room, he was ready and waiting." His voice dropped low. "We underestimated his power. When we confronted him, he didn't even have to fight us. Instead, he broke our wills.
He dominated our minds, turning us into puppets to do his bidding. He sent us back to the Republic as the vanguard of his invasion, with instructions to report back when all resistance was crushed. But though we had underestimated the Emperor's power, he underestimated us as well. Our wills were stronger than he thought. Our minds twisted and perverted his instructions until we thought we were acting of our own accord. Malik and I were turned to the dark side, but in doing so we found the strength to block out all memory of the Sith and the Emperor, partially freeing us from his control.
But you still called yourself Sith, Mitra said, puzzled. You still attacked the Republic and brought it to the verge of collapse before the Jedi captured you. And even after you stopped Malik, the Republic was still as vulnerable as it's ever been. Why didn't the Emperor just invade then?
He didn't know what had happened, Revan explained. He was waiting for us to report back. When he heard nothing, he assumed we had failed. He returned to his original plans, slowly and carefully building up his strength so that when he finally did invade, there would be no chance of defeat. Mitra glanced over at Scourge, and the Sith could guess what she was thinking. He'd originally allied with them because he feared invading the Republic would be a disaster. With Revan implying the Emperor could actually succeed, she feared he would turn on them. 2 days earlier, she would have been right. However, everything had changed when Scourge met the Emperor in person.
I won't betray you, he assured her. When I spoke with the Emperor, I briefly touched his mind. What he did on Nathema only hints at the horrors he is capable of unleashing on the galaxy. I truly understand what he has become, and I know that unchecked, he will lead us to annihilation. It is inevitable.
A good speech, Mitra said. But why should we believe you?
It's true, Revan assured her. When the Emperor broke my will, he looked into my mind, and I was able to see the reflection of his own evil. Invading the Republic is only the first step of his plan. He has become obsessed with power and immortality. The dark side is like a cancer inside him. It grows faster than he can feed it. He's consumed an entire world, but he still hungers. And with his hunger comes an all-consuming fear. He has lived 1,000 years. He knows he could live many thousands more. He's terrified of death.
Everyone is scared of dying, Mitra said.
Not like this. For him, death is not merely the end of his physical existence. The Emperor has spent a millennium gathering his strength. If he dies, he will lose everything. The thought of near infinite power slipping from his grasp has driven him mad. In his twisted mind, the only way to preserve what he has accomplished is to annihilate every potential threat in the galaxy.
Nathema was just the beginning, Scourge agreed. He will destroy world after world, his power and madness growing in concert, until he alone is left. Emperor over an empty and lifeless galaxy.
Mitra stared at the two in horror.
You've been to Nathema, Scourge said. You felt the void. You know what the Emperor is capable of.
She understands, Revan said, reading her expression more accurately than Scourge. That's not it.
He's quarantined Dromund Kaas,
Mitra said, trying to lead them to the same conclusion.
What if he's preparing to do the same thing here that he did on Nathema?
Scourge hadn't considered that possibility, and it chilled him to his core.
Is that possible?
He asked.
Nyriss told me the ritual on Nathema took days, if not weeks, and the Emperor had to trick hundreds of other powerful Sith into working with him so he could draw on their power.
He's stronger now, Revan said. But even if it's possible, I don't think he'll go that far. At least not yet. He's too patient, too careful. Dromund Kaas is the heart of his empire and the seat of his power. He has too many valuable resources here to throw it all away. But once he is ready, there will be nothing left to stop him from launching his invasion of the Republic.
What do you mean? Mitra asked.
Scourge answered on Revan's behalf.
The Emperor had to keep his plans secret because he knew the Dark Council would oppose him. Now they are wiped out, and whoever he picks to replace them will remember what happened to their predecessors and be too terrified to speak out against him.
He can also use this to rally the will of the people, Revan added. He can claim the Dark Council was working with agents of the Republic, and that is why he destroyed them. He will claim the Sith Empire has been rediscovered by its old enemy. He will convince his subjects that the only hope of survival is to strike first.
He won't make his proclamation until order is restored on Drummond Kos, Scourge noted.
That doesn't give us much time,
Mitra remarked, remembering how efficiently the guard had overrun Nyriss's stronghold.
The guard are patrolling the streets, enforcing the curfew,
Scourge said.
Only a handful remain stationed at the Citadel. Now is our best chance to strike at the Emperor.
This time I know his tricks and tactics, Revan assured them. I can shield my mind from being dominated by his will, and I can show you how to do the same.
We should wait until dawn,
Scourge said.
There will be fewer people out in the light of day, and most of the guard will be recovering at the barracks after patrolling the streets all night.
Good, Revan said. That gives us a few hours to try and get some rest. Both Mitra and Scourge nodded in agreement, though the Sith doubted any of them would get much sleep.
Chapter 26.
Scourge hovered on the edge of sleep. His body was exhausted, but his mind was churning. Unable to still his thoughts and let sleep wash over him, he tossed and turned. Unlike his Jedi companions, he had never learned to sit and meditate in order to draw sustenance from the Force. The dark side was about action and activity, not restful contemplation. But he knew that if he didn't try something, he would have to endure a long and restless night. He propped himself into a sitting position and closed his eyes, trying to open himself up to the Force. Taking slow, deep breaths, he focused on letting his mind open itself to the infinite possibilities swirling through time and space. After several minutes, he managed to drift into a state of semi-consciousness. Revan lay motionless on the floor of the Citadel's throne room. Mitra and Scourge lay beside him, their bodies twisted and broken, clinging to the last moments of life. The Emperor approached the trio, regarding them with a cold and casual contempt as he loomed above his fallen adversaries. Scourge tried to stand and flee, but his crippled limbs wouldn't support his weight. All he could do was crawl on his belly like a worm. His efforts drew the attention of the Emperor, who didn't speak, but came over and lowered himself to one knee. He grabbed Scourge by the shoulder and rolled him over, so he was staring up into the twin voids of the Emperor's eyes. As he reached out a hand and placed it on Scourge's forehead, the Sith began to scream. Scourge's eyes popped open as his mind snapped to a fully alert state of consciousness. His heart was pounding, and he could still hear the sound of his own scream ringing in his ears. Glancing around the cave, he realized the scream must have been confined to his mind. Neither Mitra nor Revan had reacted in any way. She was sitting in the same cross-legged pose Revan had often assumed during his time in Nyriss's prison. Revan was kneeling in front of T3M4, hunched forward as he rewatched the hollow bit of his wife and son. Scourge shook his head, trying to push away the remnants of his dream. But the memory stayed with him, and he began to realize that what he had seen was something more than a mere nightmare. The experience lacked the hazy, surreal feel of a dream. It had been too vivid, the details too sharp and precise to be a figment manifested by his subconscious.
there was only one possible explanation for what had happened. The Force had given Scourge a vision.
Scourge's hands began to tremble slightly as he realized he had witnessed his own destruction at the Emperor's hand. Even worse, the vision made it clear that both Mitra and Revan would suffer the same fate. He had opened himself up to the Force, and it had shown him that their coming mission would end in failure. He glanced over at the Jedi, wondering if he should warn them. Even if he did, would they believe what he said? Could he believe it? His training at the Academy had taught him little about the prophetic abilities of the Force. Was what he had seen inevitable, or was it a fate he could somehow avoid? Maybe his strong connection to the dark side would somehow color his visions, distorting them so they showed the worst of all possible futures. The simplest course would be to tell Revan what he had seen and hear his opinion of it. But Scourge knew his allies' trust in him was already fragile. If he admitted he thought their mission was doomed, it could convince them he couldn't be trusted. They might even decide it was his presence that caused their failure. After all, he was the one who had seen the vision. Scourge continued to struggle with what he had seen, trying to understand what it meant and what he should do about it. But after several more minutes of silently talking himself in circles, he realized he simply wouldn't find the answers on his own. He pushed himself to his feet and went over to where Revan was sitting. T3 paused the playback of the holovid as he approached, but left the still image of Revan's wife and son hovering in the air.
"May I speak with you?" Scourge asked, taking a seat beside the Jedi without waiting for a reply.
"You may,"
Revan said, not bothering to tear his gaze away from the projection of his family.
"I want to know more about the Force," Scourge said. "I want to understand it as you do."
Revan turned to give him a quizzical look.
"You want to know this now?"
"This might be our last chance," Scourge said. "I've been thinking about something you said to me the last time we spoke in your cell."
"What is that?"
"You knew Mitra was coming to rescue you because the Force had given you a vision."
Revan smiled. "Actually, I was bluffing. I was trying to trick you. I was hoping you might dream of me escaping and think the Force was guiding you to help me."
"Is that how it happens?"
Scourge asked, slightly miffed at Revan's confession.
"They come to you in your dreams?"
"No. A Force vision is more powerful than any dream. There is an intensity that jumps out at you, and the details do not fade. But I figured you wouldn't know the difference."
"I do now,"
Scourge thought.
"I won't apologize for lying to you,"
Revan said, mistaking the reason for his companion's silence.
"And if it makes you feel any better, I actually did have a vision of Mitra after we spoke."
"That seems a highly unlikely coincidence,"
Scourge noted.
"That is the way of the Force,"
Revan said.
"Cause and effect are not a simple linear relationship. The Force transcends space and time. It flows through us and around us. It influences our past, present, and future. Maybe I spoke to you of visions because I knew the Force was trying to reach out to me. Or maybe Mitra came to Dromund Kaas because I told you someone was coming to rescue me."
"But she started looking for you long before we had our conversation,"
Scourge protested.
"It's complicated,"
Revan answered with a cryptic smile.
"Jedi scholars have devoted centuries to understanding the ways of the Force, and we have only scratched the surface."
Scourge silently tried to digest what he was being told. At the same time, he tried to form the questions that would give him the answers he wanted without revealing what he had seen.
"Once you had the vision of Mitra, were you certain she was coming? Did you know for sure that she would help free you?"
Revan shook his head.
"We can never be certain about anything,"
The future is always in motion, and a vision shows you only one of many possible outcomes.
Then what purpose do visions serve?
They guide us, Revan explained. They give us focus. They show us a goal to strive for, or something we can work to prevent.
So the visions are not absolute.
As I said, the future is always in motion. There was another long period of silence before Scourge asked another question.
Have you had any visions of what will happen when we face the Emperor?
No, Revan said. The dark side obscures my sight. We are walking into a time and place of shadows, and I cannot promise you that we will ever come out.
Doesn't that terrify you?
Fear is only an emotion, a trick the mind plays on us. You must learn to set your fear aside.
We Sith are taught to embrace our fear, Scourge told him. We transform it into anger and use it to fuel the power of the dark side.
But then your actions will always be driven by that fear, Revan said.
And what are your actions driven by?
Scourge asked.
Logic? Reason?
No, Revan admitted. If I were reasonable, I would never have left my family behind to face the Emperor.
Then why did you do it?
Revan nodded in the direction of the holo projection. For them. I want my son to live a long and healthy life. I want him to know peace, not war. I've come to stop the Emperor for him.
And what if we don't stop him?
Scourge said, treading perilously close to the heart of what he really wanted to say.
What if he's too strong?
That is a possibility, Revan admitted. But even if we fail to defeat the Emperor, there is still hope. My return will give him pause. He will wonder how I threw off the chains of his will. He will wonder why I have returned, and how much the Republic now knows of his plan. He will even wonder about Malak. For all the Emperor knows, Malak is still out there, plotting to take the Emperor down if I fail.
You're just trying to buy time, Scourge gasped. You don't care if the Emperor kills us all. You just want to delay him.
No, Revan said. I want to live. Even more, I want to purge the galaxy of his evil once and for all. But I understand that there can be victory even in defeat. Even if we fall, we will buy time. Maybe a few years, more likely a few decades.
Time for your son to become a man,
Scourge noted bitterly.
Are you hoping he will finish what you might not?
Him, or someone else, Revan admitted. The Force always strives for balance. The Emperor is an agent of darkness and destruction. It is inevitable that a champion of the light will one day rise to oppose him. I may be that champion. He spoke with no hint of hubris. I've played the role before. At the very least, I will make the Emperor step back and reconsider his plan. If that is my fate, if my role is to sacrifice myself for the one who will come next, then I embrace it. Scourge shook his head.
I'm beginning to think you are as mad as the Emperor. I have no intention of dying tomorrow.
Neither do I. But if death comes, I will face it without fear. You will find our task easier if you can convince yourself to do the same, he said, before turning his attention back to the holo projection. Start over from the beginning, Revan told T3, and the astromech obediently restarted the recording. Scourge got to his feet and walked back to the section of the cave he had been sitting in earlier. He briefly considered talking to Mitra, then realized that would be a waste of time. She would only echo what Revan had said. The Sith sat down and crossed his legs again, closing his eyes.